sunshine. Give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good hands. Give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
All right, welcome to the pod. Others Receiving Votes is rolling on. I am Sports Illustrated's Brian Fisher, joined by my colleagues Kevin Sweeney and producer Kent, back for another week. The Olympics have come to a thrilling conclusion, and that means Pat Forty is going to be slowly making his way across the Atlantic to join us here in the not-too-distant future. So don't worry if you're waiting for some plenty of discussion on everything going on across the pond these last couple of weeks, plus everything going on here on this side of the Atlantic as well. But before then, we got a ton of things to happen on this podcast. Not one, but two guests are going to be joining us this week. First up, Miami of Ohio head coach Travis Steele is going to be chatting about having an undefeated team in men's basketball at this point in the year. Plus, Texas A&M's head coach Mike Elko is going to join us as well to talk a little bit college football. And plus, he's got 13 Aggies headed to the NFL Combine. So fun coming your way. But before we get to all of that, fellas, we must first have a discussion about college basketball, because it was a weekend that certainly felt like March. I was out at Duke, Michigan, out in D.C., and I managed to make it out certainly before everything in terms of that bomb cyclone hitting the Northeast managed to trap a lot of folks there. But it was a number of thrilling upsets. We had some great games, and the rarity of really the top four all in action against each other for the first time in years. Kevin, you are the expert on all this. How great was ball this past weekend, and what were your big takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, it was a monster. Everything you could have hoped for in terms of all the high level games being really good. Certainly Duke Michigan, I think you can attest from being there, was a Final Four level game. I thought Arizona Houston was a Final Four level game. I thought Illinois UCLA may have been the best game of the day in terms of just the thrill, neither team really being able to stop each other, and then the phenomenal finish with Donovan Dent channeling Tyus Edney and flying to the rim as time expired. So, look, I am Mr. College Basketball. I will happily beat the drum for it all year round. But if you are just joining us on the journey to March Madness, you certainly were not disappointed on Saturday.
Yeah, and like you said, big games all around, but all night too. Like, that UCLA win was crazy, and they needed it. It was a weird week for Mick Cronin. We discussed how Illinois is kind of that, not sleeper pick per se, but a team that if they cut down the nets in April, you wouldn't be shocked. So that was a huge one. Arizona statement win. I think we all look at that Arizona team as a real challenger, a real contender. To go into Houston and be able to beat Kelvin Sampson the way they did was awesome. And then the Duke-Michigan game, like you said, it felt like a Final Four feel. It had playmakers all around. It was also the type of game, and you see this in the Final Four a lot, lower scoring than maybe what people would think. And I feel like for both teams, it's kind of nice to have one of those games where it's a defensive struggle, two teams where you value good shots, you value late possession scoring, you understand that in the final 3-4 minutes, the set plays you run are going to be the difference. And that's what John Shire and Duke were able to do on Saturday night, where execute late in that game, better than what Michigan did, but none of us would be surprised if we see a rematch in March or April with those two teams again.
Yeah, I think that was the kind of takeaway from a lot of folks there in DC was like, let's see this again in Indianapolis. Like, round two would be fantastic to see between these two of them. Hopefully foul trouble, will not be quite as much of an issue for either side. I think that did kind of impact things, certainly for Michigan, maybe more so than Duke. But Cameron Boozer, Carlos Boozer, of course, saw his dad there along the sidelines. But Cameron Boozer, National Player of the Year. I mean, he was a guy that, a lot of people, he played pretty well with four fouls there down the stretch, and was certainly key. I don't think he did anything to dissuade folks out there that were thinking that he was not going to sweep up a lot of those National Player of the Year awards. Probably enhanced it with the near triple double there against Michigan, and so many clutch shots by the Blue Devils. I think that was my biggest takeaway was from the weekend was, I've long thought that this Blue Devils team was not quite to the level of last year. And look, that was a historic team. If you look at some of the KenPom numbers that they put up with Cooper Flagg and Con Knipple, who was in attendance last night. I mean, those are two NBA Rookie of the Year candidates right now. You can understand the talent on last year's team that certainly had the heartbreaking loss there in San Antonio. But I never kind of thought that this group was at that level. But I think after what they did against Michigan, I mean, 9 ranked wins this season, that they put together the resume, that they've put together the execution as well in a game like that against Michigan. This is a team that I think with John Shire, not only learning the lessons from last year, talent-wise, they can still cut down the nets. And I think that was an important thing for Duke. I think Michigan will certainly be fine. Like, if I were filling out a bracket, you know, at this point, like I was doing coming into the weekend, I probably would still have Michigan winning it all. But that's more of a really a statement for Duke in particular, I think, over the weekend. And I mean, the amount of teams right now that you can kind of consider national title contenders, it seems like that list is growing a little bit, you know, inch by inch as we make it into March. Do you feel the same way, Kevin?
Yeah, I think we've seen the best of the best from Michigan, from Duke, from Arizona, maybe more consistently. But I think over the last couple of weeks, we've seen, you know, like the ability to exploit them, right? Like, this Duke team is really, really good. And as you said, they're probably more talented than they get credit for. But I don't think they're an unbeatable force. Like, they're not an overwhelming team to play against. And I think Michigan is probably by far the most overwhelming when they're good. And, you know, when they, you know, beat Purdue earlier in the week, it felt that way because they made shots. But at the end of the day, if you can force Michigan into the half court the way Duke did, and you basically make them play, you know, 3-point roulette, like, good luck. They're not a great 3-point shooting team, right? Cadeau is up and down. Yaxel is up and down. And they don't generate great shots in the half court because of the way their offense is structured. Part of that is the personnel. And being so reliant on size and physicality. And that's what's made them so good in transition. But when you can keep them out of it the way Duke did, it's massive. And so, yeah, I think it's brought teams back to the field a little bit. I do think that there's, you know, a handful of others that could win it. But I do think with the way this year has been and with the number of elite teams, I do think it shrinks the total number of teams you could envision winning the championship, because, like, I can sit here and say Purdue's really good, right? Purdue's 7th in KenPom right now. They're a monster statistically, analytically. But, like, you've watched them play enough times against the best of the best. It's not just, oh, could they beat one of them on an individual night? It's, could I beat 2 or 3 in a row, right? That's what it's going to take, an Elite Eight game, a Final Four game, a national championship game. And I don't envision this being a year where the bracket gets completely blown up and the path is cleared for a team that otherwise isn't built that way. I think you're going to have to go through the big dog. So that shrinks the list a little bit to me. But I don't think, as good as Michigan is, as good as Duke is, that they are unbeatable. And I think that makes what's coming in March very, very compelling.
Yeah. And then, of course, with some injuries too, you have like the Toppin injury. That's a team that I think would have been in the mix a bit more. Yeah. They're probably not there now. You even look at teams that have maybe overachieved, Nebraska, Vanderbilt. I don't buy into them all that much. So to me, if you're going to give me Michigan, Duke, Arizona versus the field, I would still take those three and feel pretty good about it.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Kit. I mean, obviously there was a lot of news on Saturday in terms of the men's basketball selection committee kind of doing their annual checkup and releasing their top 16. Obviously, Michigan was kind of the number one overall seed, according to the committee, followed by Duke, Arizona, and Iowa State as the other number one seeds. And promptly, obviously, two of those ended up losing in Iowa State to BYU and obviously Michigan as well. Probably doesn't really change much in terms of the bracketing, but certainly does open things up. I think that South region is going to be really interesting because you had the committee kind of label Iowa State there as that top team over Houston, but we could certainly see Houston get right back into it to where they get that kind of home regional final. Going to be an interesting jockeying going on. Obviously, a number of other teams ended up losing as well that were up there. You had UConn, you had Houston, Illinois, Purdue, Florida, and Kansas to round up the top 10 from the committee. And I'm sure there will be plenty of movement as we kind of close in down here going into conference tournaments and into actual selection Sunday. But Ken, I'll leave it up to you. Anybody kind of out there a little bit miffed at where they were being considered by the committee, or do you think everybody's kind of properly rated given that we do have kind of that up and down nature of college basketball nowadays because, you know, teams are so closely bunched?
Yeah, I think they did a good job with it. There's nothing that stood out that much that was overly surprising. I do just kind of want to throw a little shout out to Virginia. Yeah. They scored 86 points over the weekend in a game. And I know even though they beat my Hurricanes, Tony Bennett must have watched that and thought, that's not how you win basketball. You don't need 86 points. So it's a different Virginia. For those that are just getting into college basketball, remember, this isn't going to be a Virginia team that wins 48 to 47 a whole lot going forward, to keep that in mind. But I thought as a whole, maybe Gonzaga is hard to value just because they just don't have the quality of games the way they a lot of these other teams do. So whether Gonzaga ends up like a 3 or a 4, I don't think is that big of a difference. But overall, there was nothing that stood out to me that wasn't overly expected in that initial 16.
I would just give a quick shout out to Sunbelt Commissioner and Chair of the Committee, Keith Gill, because we have had our share of adventures with committee chairs struggling to show their work. That's been an issue both in football with the college football playoff and certainly in the NCAA tournament. I thought he did a phenomenal job of like clearly and concisely explaining where teams were and why. And hopefully that continues into Selection Sunday. I'm sure there will be there's certainly more drama on Selection Sunday than the mock top 16 reveal. But that was an encouraging sight because I think given the process is so convoluted at times and feels often like, you know, you sort of find the answers and then find the justification for those answers. It was nice to feel like there was someone out there that could competently explain how the committee got to where they got. I think that's critical for a kind of faith in the process moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, Keith, certainly one of the more affable commissioners. You know, no surprise to see him thrive up there on CBS and on that set and really doing a good job of explaining things, especially some of the bracketing principles. I know there was a mock selection committee with a number of our peers in the media, and I think that kind of does get lost going into Selection Sunday. It really does kind of add to this kind of final close of the season. I mean, are you talking about some of those Big Ten teams that are going to end up playing each other? You know, you talked about some of the Big 12 teams in particular. Even, you know, we got Duke, Virginia coming up as well in terms of the ACC. Those wins mean a whole heck of a lot down the stretch in terms of avoiding some of these teams in terms of landing in their same region. You know, certainly having that more preferable path from a geography standpoint. We all know how difficult it is to travel nowadays with everything going on that front. Not only speaking to the weather at this point, but, you know, it's going to mean a whole lot if you can end up getting some of those bus games, you know, and certainly in the first couple of rounds or even getting that preferred regional path. It's going to be huge down the stretch with some of these big games coming up to say, hey, you know what, maybe there is that nicer path for us available.
No question. No, it's huge. And you know, there are some interesting kind of convoluted things in terms of, as you said, conferences being joined, especially with these big conferences now, the challenges that puts on the committee. But yeah, I mean, Iowa State or Houston would love to be able to play in Houston in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight. Maybe Iowa State blocks their path to do that. Illinois would love to play in Chicago. That may be complicated by Michigan. So there's a handful of those, and those will be fascinating to watch because so much of this is about the path. And I know Houston AD Eddie Nunez talked about it after last year when they had to go up to Indianapolis and play Purdue as a top seed in their region, you know, playing a lower seeded team in the Sweet 16 and like basically playing a road game. And that was why it was so important to them to relinquish hosting duties and try to have an opportunity to go through Houston. We'll see if they can pull that off. But I think if you've been in this world the way that ADs and coaches have over the years, you understand the importance of the path, both in terms of the teams you play, but also where you're playing those games.
Awesome. Well, we're going to keep this college basketball train rolling, and we're going to have we're going to duck off for a few minutes and come back right after the break. We're going to have Miami of Ohio head coach, the undefeated Red Hawks, certainly rolling through, and not only in terms of the MAC, but rolling through the rest of college basketball. It's going to be fascinating to see how they fit into March Madness and to give us some more insight. We'll have Travis Steele on right after this.
Welcome back, others receiving votes. Kevin Sweeney, Brian Fisher, joined by the last undefeated in college basketball, Coach Travis Steele. Coach, we know you're busy trying to keep that streak up. Appreciate you hopping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
I guess where I would start, you've been around elite teams before, back at Xavier. I imagine you know what it looks like. When was the point with this group where maybe it felt a little different, that there was a chance that this could be a really special group, not just a really good basketball team?
Yeah, Kevin, I think last year when we lost in the MAC tournament championship game against Akron, you know, we led for 39 minutes and 55 or 56 seconds, and we lost a heartbreaker, man. It was tough. And I think those hard moments really define who you are, right? They reveal who you are. And when I started meeting with our guys individually right after that on Monday, it was 2 days later, trying to figure out who's on your team, who's out, you know, it's all that. and all of our guys were so hungry to get back going, you know, but the NCAA says you have to shut it down, I think, for a couple weeks, you know, like if you're not going to play in any postseason. And, but I knew the spring, listen, it was the best spring I've ever been around in all my years of college basketball. Just the competitiveness, the fight, the extra work, the player leadership, whether it was in the weight room, on the court, was elite. And I was like, man, we got a chance to be really good. And I was interested to see if we could continue that and kind of into the summer when we brought in our freshmen and our one transfer that we brought in out of the portal. And man, just continued. And I was just like, man, this, the consistency piece has just been incredible. And that's due to the player leadership that we have with Evan Ipsaro, who's injured right now, but he's still an integral part to our team. Peter Suter, Ian Elmer, guys that have been here. And it goes a long, long, long way that retention does.
Yeah, you mentioned the one transfer there, Coach. I mean, it seems so rare that we can rely on that for some of these teams. Do you feel like you're kind of going against the grain at this point in terms of your roster building?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. While everybody else is zigging, I decide to zag, you know, and sometimes it's easier just to be different and be better. And, you know, Miami, listen, it's an elite academic school, and it's original public Ivy. We have to recruit a lot of high school here. There's no doubt. But we use that as our main source. Like, we have five freshmen on our current roster, right? We play four of them, you know, varying minutes, but they're getting experience. And then we brought in one transfer. So we'll supplement with the transfer portal. But it's got to be the right fit out of the portal, because the portal is like speed dating. And I don't like taking a young man not knowing exactly what we're getting. Anybody can watch film or pull up stats. But who's impacting winning? Who's helping you build your culture, make it even stronger? Like, those things we really value here.
What's the secret sauce to have guys want to stick around, right? Like, I imagine there was financial implications for those guys that in many ways probably took less money to be back and were hungry to be back and chase that championship. What were you guys able to sell differently to make them want to be back?
Yeah, I think, you know, their recruitment is their experience here. I'm not going to talk them into staying. Their decisions have probably already been made, if we're being honest, when you have that meeting. And so for me, it's how they're treated on a day-to-day basis. You know, like, one of the best things I've ever done was I coached my, he's now a seventh grader. When he was in fourth grade, I coached his AAU team. And it just, like, it opened my eyes to, like, man, why did I love basketball? It's because it's fun. You can make basketball fun and work hard. They're not like, they don't have to be separated, right? And so the experience we give our guys, I think, is very important. The development's got to be real. Are they getting better? Can all their dreams come true here as far as being a pro? Are they getting a great degree? The connectivity, does the culture, do they enjoy it? Do they enjoy each other? All those things are in place here, which I think has really helped us with the retention of our roster.
Is that kind of showing up? You know, I mean, you guys have played some close games, but you guys have been able to execute certainly down the stretch when normal teams might want to falter or go away from that. You guys have come out with execution down the stretch and able to pull out some of those close wins to remain undefeated. Is that where that kind of carryover happens?
I think so. And listen, we got winners. I mean, all of our guys have won, whether it's state championships or won at their previous school. We value guys that have won and impacted winning. And that retention, like, to your point, is that they trust each other. The connectivity's there. I mean, it just is. So when we go through adverse times, we get tighter. Whereas a lot of teams may start to splinter a little bit, I'd argue we get tighter and we get better in those moments than we are when we're doing well.
Was there ever a fear that with success and with the attention you guys have gotten, that it would be harder to keep the group together? And I guess, how have they responded so well to the success and not had the letdown spot that I think a lot of people would think comes naturally with the type of season you're having?
Yeah, complacency can really set in, right? And, you know, like, I love visuals. I showed our guys a picture of a guy driving a car, and he was driving it from the inside. You could see his hand on the wheel, and he had a phone in his hand. And I asked Antoine Wolfolk, I said, what do you see? He said, I see a guy texting and driving. And I said, that's right. I said, well, it seems like he's pretty distracted. I said, what does that lead to? And Peter Suter said, well, that leads to you hitting an obstacle. I said, that's exactly right. I said, at that time, this was probably about a month and a half ago. We use different pictures and metaphors and all that. But our guys understand, man, they keep the main thing. We have not had a bad practice all year. The consistency has been incredible. And it's because we got great player leadership. Like I've said before, we got great character. We have fun though. I want our guys to enjoy this ride, right? I mean, dude, we're whatever we are, we're undefeated. I don't know how many wins we have. We have a lot. And it's just like, I want them to enjoy the moment and enjoy each other. You know, so I made myself a little vulnerable in front of the group. I said, fellas, as we start winning more and more, people are going to try to pull us apart. They're going to try to pull at us, whether it's agents, whether it's other schools, whether it just happens. It's just part of success. And we all made a pact to each other that we were just going to stay focused on the ride that we're on and enjoy each other.
At the same time, there is still a little bit of pressure that comes with that dash zero in that record and more national television appearances. It seems like every time you guys do end up playing a game, we kind of got to circle it on the calendar now. We got to tune in. How are you guys handling the increased pressure that comes from that zero in that loss column?
Yeah, it's weird. Like I had a friend of our families was at our Marshall game on the road a few weeks back, and he hit my father-in-law and said, man, I can't believe how loose Travis is and their team. He said, I thought they'd be uptight, you know, being undefeated. We have fun. I mean, like we work really hard. We do everything. We focus on the things that we can control. And I also think when you do it for others rather than just yourself, like when you do it for yourself, I think you feel more pressure. When you do it for others, like, hey, I want to do this for our players, our staff, you don't feel it as much, man. And that's where those relationships that we have, and that it's nice to have the retention, they really help us.
Obviously, we have to ask about the schedule. That is the common refrain. And nope, Miami hasn't played anybody. Why should we take them seriously? And I think myself and lots of others would respond. Have you tried scheduling games when you're bringing back half your team from a 25 win team? I guess, can you take us through the realities of what it's like to try to get quote unquote better non-conference games and what it's like in this era of non-conference scheduling at a place like Miami, Ohio?
Yeah. You know, my first couple of years, there was a line from Oxford, Ohio to Cincinnati, Ohio to play us. There was a long line. And then all of a sudden, I probably didn't realize, guys, how hard it was going to be to schedule coming off a 25 win season with a lot of retention. It's like all of a sudden it's like, man, it's June. And it's like, man, we got to get a lot of games. And I'm like, man, usually we have a good portion of the schedule done by then. And Jonathan Holmes, who's my associate head coach, who does a great job. Listen, he should have been a head coach yesterday. Quite honestly, he's been doing scheduling for 15 years, 16 years at this level. He said, coach, we got a major problem. This isn't good. We're either getting all hard no's or, hey, we'll hit you back. And couldn't get any P5s or P6s to play us. And I understand why, right? Like from their standpoint, it's like, well, they're supposed to play, you know, quad one, quad two, quad three, quad four games. Obviously, they're not going to come here to Miami and play us, nor should they. That's ridiculous. You know, so it's like, we got to go there. So it's a home game for them. So they need quad one and quad four games. They're not supposed to play quad two, quad three. Well, that's where we are. So totally understand from a numbers perspective why they didn't want to play us. And we talked to the Blue Bloods. I mean, wasn't like, because there's levels to this thing. You guys know at the P5, P6, and they all said no. And so I hated that for our guys. And then you start to, okay, well, let's play other really good mids, like teams. And it's like, man, you'd send in a contract, they'd agree to it, or we're going to play on a neutral site. Hey, we agree to it. And then all of a sudden, nope, we're not doing that. It's like, it's the most frustrating part of our job, scheduling. It's awful. I just wish our athletic directors would deal with it and take it out of the coach's hands. And I think it'd be a lot simpler, in my opinion.
Well, you know, David and your AD and everybody else that involved in that, they have a few things on their plate as well. But we saw some terrific success this past weekend. Duke and Michigan went out and played a non-conference game. We used to have bracket busters, you know, back in the day. Would you be in favor of either more teams kind of doing what Duke and Michigan did in terms of kind of taking that break at this point in the year to maybe build up that resume or bring something back like bracket busters that we used to have?
I love it. I love it. I used to love the 24-hour marathon, too.
Yes.
I mean, that was awesome. What? I mean, you get to watch ball all day, all night. I mean, but we tried it. So we do the Mac Sunbelt Challenge. We play one game at the beginning of the year, the first game of the year. We played Old Dominion at home. And then we had a road game slotted more towards, I don't know, it was a couple weeks ago. And they try to slot comparable nets, right? So like Marshall's had a really good year. And so we got kind of positioned to play them to hopefully that would help us later on, maybe a seed line if we win the game, you know, if we're able to make the NCAA tournament. So we try to, I think the MAC and Sunbelt's trying to kind of like duplicate that a little bit, you know, that bracket busters a little bit. But I love the bracket busters, man. You're talking my language right now.
I have to imagine that one of the most rewarding parts of all of this has been seeing the crowds and the fan support and seeing the community kind of embrace you guys. Obviously, yeah, Ohio is a big basketball state, and you think about, you know, Cincinnati and Xavier and Dayton, but like to look around and see these monster crowds that you have right now, I guess, how cool is it, especially from where it was when you first got the job?
Yeah. You know, my friend, one of my buddies down in Cincinnati, he used to come, he used to ask me for tickets all the time. And I just give him, I say, hey man, give these away, whatever we got to do. I mean, cause we would have maybe 100 people at our games. I mean, this is the worst environment in all of college basketball, in my opinion, my first couple of years here. We had zero home court advantage. And I was like, man, we have to flip this. If we're going to give ourselves a chance to win our league, you have to be able to dominate at home. And we've won 30 games in a row now at home, but it's really flipped, man. I give the Miami community has gotten behind our team so much. I mean, we're selling out Millett Hall, which we've had the biggest crowds ever here, which is insane from where it was. I think like, because now my buddy said, he said, well, can I get tickets? And I said, well, you can go on StubHub and pay $300 or $400 for a ticket, which is insane to even say that. Now kind of compared to where we were. So it's been a lot of fun. Hopefully we're curating memories for our student base that are attending the games. I mean, it's a blast. It's like a big party in Millett Hall. And for our players, man, I'm just so happy for them that they're able to experience this.
Travis, you're at Xavier. You'd never had a losing record. Obviously, they let you go before the team ended up winning the NIT. But you jumped right back in to grab this job. You know, normally coaches might take a year off. They might go join it as an assistant, especially at maybe a P4 type of school. You jumped right back into coaching. Why take this Miami of Ohio job, you know, initially? And then kind of did you see it becoming what it's become up to this point?
Yeah. You know, when the Xavier thing happened, man, it was sudden, as it always is for anybody that's been in that situation. I love Xavier. My Xavier experience was awesome, man. The relationships that I have are with me for the rest of my life, man. Some great memories. Love that place. Appreciated the opportunity, you know. And then all of a sudden, it's like I'm down in Florida with my family down at the beach, and it's like, man, I've never not been around a team. I mean, you think you play sports, youth sports, you play high school sports, and then you're coaching, and it just feels weird. You feel like you're just isolated in a weird spot. So I was like, you know what? I need to coach. I think Amanda, my wife, probably said, hey, listen, you need to go back to work too. I'm tired of you at this point. So 2 weeks later, I mean, I was unemployed for probably 2 weeks, and it just kind of timing's everything, right, in life. And I thought Miami had a lot of upside. Very proud tradition here. Ron Harper, Wally Zerbiak, Wayne Embry, Ira Neubel, all-time winningest program in the MAC, but it just had not been done in a long, long time. And I knew it was going to be a rebuild. And I asked David Saylor if he'd be patient with me. He's our athletic director. And I just said, will you be patient with me? Because I'm going to try to build it really slow. I'm going to build it exactly like I want to build it. It's like building a house. You don't have to, you're not, hey, I'm just going to paint this wall. I got to build it from scratch. And I told him, I said, the first 2 years are probably going to be a little tough. I said, but year three, you'll see significant growth. And you'll see like the framing of the house, right? That goes up quick and everybody's excited about the new house. Well, shoot, the foundation's been built for the last 6 months, 7 months. Well, that was our first 2 years, was getting our foundation right. And I knew it had a place that had a great upside to it. And And I'm just excited and super fortunate to be here.
Is it hard to not get overly obsessed with the at-large bid conversation and things like that? Like, is there ever a point where you're just sitting here like, man, it's so ridiculous that we're 27-0 and when we have to like politic our way potentially into the NCAA tournament? And obviously you have a path in regardless by taking care of business in the MAC tournament. I guess how do you view the at-large conversation around your guys, and how do you approach it as things get very real in the crunch time to Selection Sunday?
Yeah, you know, like I've addressed it with our guys too, Kevin. Like, because I know again they see everything, they hear everything. We just got control the controllables, right? And that's a good thing you mentioned it. Listen, we can get the automatic qualifier by winning the MAC tournament in Cleveland. We got to control every day, having a great practice, great lift, great film session. But listen, we're blessed to be in the position we're in. We're playing meaningful games. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, that's the way I look at it, man. It's awesome. Like, and again, I think we got a really good team. We've won a lot of games on the road, neutral. Like I said, we played good teams too, man. Like, we played some good teams. Yeah, again, you're going to say, hey, well, we played some teams that aren't as good too, and we have. We've had a mixed bag. So, but we played those that would play us, and I like our team, man. I know this. Our group feels like we can beat anybody in the country. It doesn't matter when we step on that floor. They have complete belief and swagger that you need in order to win those games in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a time, you know, I think in kind of mid-February, if there is a team that's undefeated, you start hearing that talk, oh, they need to lose one, you know, to experience that, or maybe you can fuel it, or you guys are like taking the opposite track. You know, you're out there on game day promising, jumping in Speedos. Like, it seems like you guys have embraced this run more than anything.
Hey, listen, any coach that says that they need to take a lot is no way. We ain't playing to lose, man. I do think you can learn from losses, but you can learn from wins, right? That's what the great teams do. They learn from winning. Because there's so many areas we got to get better at still here that I think we could take another jump as a team here over the next few weeks. And, you know, we just take it day by day, man. Like, just enjoying the process, like I said, of practice and lifting and film and getting better, man. Because I still think we have some upside with our team.
I guess, you know, closing the book, you said that at the end of last year and experiencing heartbreak that your guys were hungrier than ever from that. I guess where they are now, having, I guess, experienced the fruits of their labor, do you still see the same hunger every day?
I do. Listen, this guy, Peter Suter, I mean, he's at, like, we're in the spring, last spring. We're playing I like to play 3-on-3 in the off season. Because you get more touches, more decisions. And this guy's diving on the floor, taking charges in the spring. He's taking charges at practice today. It's like, dude, slow down. It's like, pal. But everybody's like, the Ian Elmer's everywhere. I mean, Antoine Wolfolk. I mean, like, these dudes care. They really care. And they play to win, man. We compete. And it's the practices are more fun than the games. They really are. And I think our guys would all say that to a man.
Well, I'm not sure I'm looking forward to Selection Sunday Speedo, Travis Steele, but I'm certainly looking forward to the Cinderella story that could come. Coach, we appreciate the time and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. I better go work out so I can get ready for the Speedo.
All right, the calendar is about to turn to March, but that's still football season around here for a lot of us, and that's why we're thrilled to give a big howdy to the head coach at Texas A&M, Mike Elko, today. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, before we talk a little bit about a few of your Aggies in this past season there in College Station, I'm just kind of curious, what is this time on the calendar like for you, kind of between the roster building of January, February? You got things like the portal going on. And spring football coming up. Are you catching up on like some Netflix shows? Are you crossing the honey-do list off? Like what's are you Mr. Chauffeur? What is Mike Elko doing nowadays?
Yeah, I wish. There's certainly some honey-do stuff. I think you get to this time of year and you're pretty much at the mercy of whatever your wife wants you to do. You have no choice if you want to stay married. And then I think some of it is just kind of getting in the building. And it feels like I told the media this the other day. It feels like such a race from, you know, you walk off the field, you lose your last game, and you literally don't feel like you breathe. And it's just nonstop, It's roster retention, it's portal recruiting, it's high school recruiting, and then you hit February and it's like finally you just kind of take a step back and you get to regroup and start to build some foundations for what you want this to do, start to look at some scheme stuff, and just nice to be in-house and able to go back to work with your team.
Well, you know, the biggest reason that we wanted to have you on was a couple of you guys that I'm sure you have been watching quite a bunch of film. The NFL Combine obviously starts this week. And the Aggies not only set a school record there with sending 13 guys to Indianapolis, but most school of any school in the country. What's that kind of say about your program and the season that you guys just had?
Yeah, I think it says that we're moving in the direction we want to move. I think one of the things we talked a lot about when I got here was, you know, the need to develop players in this program, the need to have more NFL draft picks, more representation at the combine. Those were all marks for us for what a successful program looks like, especially one that wants to compete year in and year out for championships. And so, it's a nice step, obviously, to see our players get the recognition, to have 13 guys at the combine. I'm actually going to go up there on Thursday to get a chance to just kind of support those guys. And it's just, again, that's what we need this program to become. And so it's a good first year of doing that.
Yeah, Mike, whenever you look at your program, you now made the CFP. You were in that hunt in the top five for a portion of the year, the big win over Notre Dame to start the season. Making the college football playoff, putting your program now with a chance to say, we have done that, we have put ourselves in that position. How much is that also a sell to know that not only do you have guys in the NFL, but now you have the background to go in to recruits' homes, to go into the transfer portal and say, you come here, you have a chance to not only compete for an SEC, you have a chance to legitimately play for a national championship.
Yeah, we want to be known for a program that accomplishes things. And I think that's something that has been really a message from this staff in this era of what we're trying to do. And, it's nice to be talked about for potential. It's nice to be talked about for what you can do. But now I think we're in a conversation of what we are doing, right? And that's a big difference when you're talking about high school recruiting and attracting top talent. Is, you know, we have put 13 guys at the combine. We are going to get double-digit draft picks. We have competed to be in Atlanta down to the last week of the season. We have qualified for the CFP playoff. We are a top 10 program at the end of the year. Like, those are tangible, actual things that this program has accomplished. And I think maybe lost in some of the hype in some of the past years was, you know, being able to actually do those things and sell that.
I mean, seven of those 13 guys that are you're going to be joining there at the combine are offensive and defensive linemen. Is that kind of scary to think about in terms of, hey, we got to replace all those guys? Or are you kind of saying, hey, that is also more reflective of kind of the program we want to be in terms of who we are producing for that kind of NFL talent?
Yeah, probably a little of both. You know, obviously, I think it's the program you want to be, especially playing in this conference where the line of scrimmage is so critical. I think everybody knows that, you know, that's a little bit of the separator when you talk about SEC football is the quality of the line of scrimmage. I think defensively, it's been something we've been doing, honestly, since 2018 when I got hired here as the D coordinator. We've had more NFL D linemen draft picks than any other program in the country since 2018. And so we've kind of got into this rhythm of replacing defensive line draft picks. We had three last year. Everybody wondered what we would be able to do this year. Looks like we're going to have another three this year. And so now this is the first time we're doing it on the other side too, right? And so now it's both lines. And, you know, we were able to go out in the portal and add some guys. And we've got some young players that are going to need to step up and develop. But it is. It's where it starts. And if you're getting 5 to 7 draft picks on the line of scrimmage year in and year out, it probably means you've had a pretty successful season and you're building a pretty successful program.
Yeah, and you know, those three draft picks last year, all top 100 picks as well. You know, Cassius Howell's probably the next guy to join them, and certainly when you kind of look at some of those kind of mock drafts and all that, he's just a, you know, I think he's kind of a Tasmanian devil off the edge. He's so good at that. Well, what makes him kind of special? What are NFL teams talking to you about him? And what are kind of some of those teaching points that you emphasize with guys like Cassius that do end up translating from Saturday into Sunday?
Yeah, I think the first thing is he can rush the passer, right? And the NFL is such a disrupt the quarterback league. And so when you see a guy who has played against the top competition in college football and has produced pressure rates and sack rates at the level he has, that's obviously a really strong starting point. I think he's got a variety of rushes. He's got some flexibility in coverage too, which is something that some of the coordinators across the league are excited about, just having that flexibility. Not that you do that a lot, but just a little bit of that flexibility is just always good. And I just think he's a really cool story. I think it's a kid who it was recruited during COVID, didn't probably get the exposure that he warranted coming out of high school, winds up at Bowling Green. Our scouting department finds him when he enters the portal, and we're able to get him here, you know, in large part because we got some Bowling Green connections on our staff, and you know, and to watch him flourish in our system into what he became this year, and to follow him through this offseason and watch his name get called, it'd be really special.
And how great is it to have your quarterback back? When you look at this landscape of college football, there's a lot of one-year starters, one-year transfers. The fact that you have a guy like Marcel Reed back in College Station prepping for another year as a starter, that has to be a relief as a coaching staff to have that investment and have your starter back as not only a returning starter, but a true leader to your team.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways. I think, one, us as a staff, knowing who he is, knowing what we have, knowing, you know, kind of a plan of attack in the offseason in the areas we want to see him grow and continue to develop, but also knowing kind of how to build an offense around him, because we've played a lot of really competitive football games with him as our quarterback. And so that helps the familiarity with the locker room, you know, to say, okay, hey, listen, we brought in some new linemen, we brought in a new wide receiver, like, let's bring all this thing together. And now you're looking at your quarterback as the guy that can be able to do that. That helps a lot. And you know, I do. I think there's continuity in system that matters. I think one of the things that got lost a little bit in the Indiana story is how many of those kids played at JMU. You know, it's not just all transfers, you know, and there certainly were a lot of them, but you know, there were a lot of kids who had been in those systems for a really long time between JMU and Indiana. And I do think there's continuity of system that matters.
Well, you bring it up. I feel like a lot of coaches are going to get asked that question. What do you take away kind of from those most recent national title runs? And certainly Indiana kind of comes to mind. Is there a coaching point? Is there a roster building thing that you kind of say, oh, I didn't think about things that way. But, you know, after seeing them in action and making that run to Miami, hey, maybe we can bring some of that magic here to College Station.
No, I think we have our process that we believe in. I think obviously you're seeing more parity in college football. That's great. I think that's something that you can sell. I think you're seeing talent get distributed a little bit more across different landscapes. And so I think that leads more teams going into the season to believe they've got a shot to go win it all and go compete for those playoff berths. I think that's all really good for college football. And I think we've just got to stay focused on our process and what we feel like we need to do each year to build a roster that gives us a chance. And I think we've done that again. And I think we're really excited about where this program, where this team will be this year.
How have you kind of adjusted? Obviously, two new coordinators for you. In terms of the program, some guys that obviously you knew well that got promotions, but how have you kind of adjusted to this offseason, and especially not only integrating new guys on that coaching staff, but integrating so many new guys, certainly from the transfer portal and the high school ranks that are coming into the roster as well this year?
Yeah, it kind of feels like that's what college football is. You know, I think we were able to have some staff continuity last offseason going from year one to year two, which you would hope would expect. But, you know, now that you've been a successful program, you know, it's great to see Colin Klein get his chance to be a head coach at Kansas State. That obviously moves some pieces with him, and you're going to have to replace that. And, you know, we've had some other guys get some opportunities that are right for them and their families. And, you know, those are things that you want in your program. And so, you know, defensively, we were able to bring in Lyle Hemphill, and he has been here with us for over a year now, and a guy that I've known for a really, really long time. And so that transition, I think, will be seamless. And it's great to have him in the building ready to roll to run the defense for us. And then Holman Wiggins is a guy that I've gotten to know over the last 2 years and has been a real integral piece in our offensive success and our wide receiver development and a lot of what we've done in the passing game. And so he made the most sense for us with where we are as a program right now to take that next step in his career and call plays for the first time. And so we got a ton of confidence in him and, you know, kind of what he'll be able to do with this system moving forward.
Now, one debate that's come up recently, especially expanded playoff, things of that nature, out of conference big games. And you look at last year, you guys beat Notre Dame, Miami, who only got in the playoff because they beat Notre Dame. And then even Ohio State was able to get a bye because they beat Texas. You start to look at those big games. There's now the backlash of, what if you don't play those games and you play a cupcake? Well, your record get you in the playoff. But I think you probably look at those big games, and I would imagine going forward, you probably want to keep playing those signature out-of-conference games, because don't you feel like winning those big games outweigh any sort of negative that can come from those, even if you happen to lose those?
No, honestly, I don't. I think if you look at us, I made this point a couple of weeks ago in head coach meetings. You know, we were an 11-1 football team who beat Notre Dame, but I don't know where that showed up when you looked at us compared to the 11-1 teams. You know, from 4-7, all of those teams finished 11-1, and we had the most signature out-of-conference win, and we were 7. And so, to me, there was only risk in that game. There was no reward. And so I think – you know, it's a challenging situation. It is. I say this all the time, and it's really the reality. There's no sample size, right? So you look at the other sports, and they play 18, 20 out-of-conference games in basketball and baseball, which create these formulas to identify conferences as being stronger or not stronger in any given season. We don't have that in football. And so year in and year out, the NFL tells us that the most NFL talent is spread evenly throughout the SEC, which makes our conference top to bottom one of the most challenging gauntlets to go through. How do you equate that? Like, how does that get quantified? I don't know. They're still having a hard time figuring that out. And so then you throw in these out of conference where really the only thing that seems to matter on these schedules is wins and losses. And I think that's the biggest challenge. And I don't have a great solution, because I don't think there is one to this thing as you look forward. You know, if the AFC only played the AFC, and then all of a sudden it was getting compared to NFC teams when it came time to pick playoff teams, that's probably the best way to relate it, right? And there's just no way to compare them.
Well, you mentioned those head coaching meetings. I mean, is there concern in that room now, especially with the SEC moving to 9 games, that maybe that conference schedule is not going to get maybe evaluated as properly as you guys certainly would like it to be by the committee moving forward?
Yeah, I think everybody's a little bit nervous about what this selection process looks like as you move forward. I think that's one of the, again, it's what we're all being judged on is getting into the playoffs. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges is what is that formula and how does this thing look moving forward? And again, I'm not complaining. I'm not saying there's an easy solution that people aren't identifying, but it's a challenging situation. And how you identify 9 conference games in our conference versus 9 conference games in another conference, and how does that all get equated? I don't know. The committee's got their hands full, that's for sure.
That they do. And, you know, I brought up the calendar to you earlier, and I know that seems like to be the thing that a lot of coaches love to complain about, you know, this time of year. Now, you know, you're a super smart coach. You're an Ivy League grad. If we made you college football czar and put you in charge of not only the calendar, but really the sport in general, are there any broad changes you kind of bring to the table?
No, I think the thing people miss in the calendar conversation is that we're driven by academic semesters. And I think people throw around calendar ideas without understanding that there's a spring semester. And so we can't just do things in the middle of the spring semester, because part of our roster management strategy is getting kids into school and getting them enrolled. And Texas A&M doesn't enroll kids in March. And so, you know, the conversations about trying to do it all after the season, that's 3 weeks into the spring semester. And so that'd be a really awkward time to start the process of enrolling your team. And so I don't know that there's a solution. I don't think there is, given the current structure of when games are played and how they're played. And so I actually like the calendar the way it stood this year. I enjoyed being able to be off the road in December and being able to kind of focus on things that we wanted to. I liked the portal being in January. I felt like that was the right time for it. It saved it in a lot of ways. And so, again, I think we got to just continue to evaluate each year and see where we can find opportunities to improve. But I don't think what I do know is there's not a very easy solution like a lot of people are calling for, because you know, the academic semesters make a big difference.
Ken, you got anything else?
I guess one other thing I would say is when you bring up 9 conference games, and that's become one of the big issues. The Big Ten, of course, similar. ACC has not quite done that. When you look at the landscape of college football as a whole, it does seem like there's nobody in charge, so to speak. You have conference commissioners, but then that's really about it. And at the end of the day, we understand the conference commissioners are serving their schools, their constituents. What would you want if you could have a magic wand and say, there needs to be an overall commissioner. Everybody in the power school should be under the same sort of 9-game schedule. What would you want that you think would help the longevity of how college football is trying to go towards the fact that it's seemingly moving where it's the power schools versus everyone else? But what would be something you would want to put in place?
Yeah, I've said this before. I think the need for somebody to be in charge of, and whether it's somebody or it's a board, but there has to be a singular group running college football. I think the way this thing has changed, the way the landscape has changed, it's critical that we're no longer making regional decisions. It's critical that we're no longer making decisions just based on what's most important to any individual conference. You know, we need a group of people to be in charge of what's best for college football moving forward, and to understand all of the landscape and what goes into it, and to try to figure out how to create a structure in and around it. And so, you know, it's an extremely lucrative business. It's an extremely popular business. I don't know that there's anything like it in the world that doesn't have singular leadership, right? And so when you think about it from that perspective, I've said this before, it's a $1 billion industry, and you guys can't tell me who's running it. That seems weird.
Is there any magic number on a perfect amount of playoff teams in your mind?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think the expanded playoff has been good. I think keeping the regular season important is critical to football. I don't think you ever want it to water down to where the regular season doesn't feel like it means something. But no, I don't think there's a magical number. I think sometimes it's good to just say, okay, hey, we made a big jump from 4 to 12. Like, let's see kind of what this thing looks like before we go jumping around to what the next, you know, we always look for what the next iteration is before we try to perfect the one that we have. But I don't think there's a magic number to it.
Well, speaking of numbers, you've improved that win total year over year since you've been in College Station. But we all know that jump from going from 11-1 regular season to an even better record than that.
There's not a big mark above that.
No, there's not. I mean, but as small as it might look on paper, it's obviously a big jump on the field. What's going to be that difference for you guys this season upcoming in terms of making that possible leap from going down to Atlanta?
Yeah, we're focused on brand elevation and program elevation. I think that's kind of where our focus has been since I got here. And we knew we had a lot of things that needed to elevate to ultimately be a team that could achieve those things you're talking about, right? Being in Atlanta, going further in the playoffs. And so, you know, we're focused just kind of on the day-to-day operation of building and improving this brand. And as we do that and continue to maximize who we are and what we're capable of, I think results will continue to follow. And so, you know, we're excited for another great offseason. We're excited for another opportunity to put a team together to go accomplish things on the field for Texas A&M football. And again, as long as that stays the focus, I think ultimately we're going to get this program where we wanted to go.
Well, certainly some exciting times there in College Station. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck in Indianapolis with all your guys. Hopefully there's no weather issues for you getting there, but I'm sure there will be plenty of fun to be had with your combines and then down in the draft with a lot of Aggies, I'm sure to hear their name called.
Yeah, we're excited. We appreciate you guys having us on and looking forward to the draft.
Awesome. That is Mike Elko, the head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies. All right, fascinating conversation there with Mike Elko. Certainly appreciate his time on the podcast, as well as Travis Steele a little bit earlier from the Miami of Ohio Redhawks. We'll try to get some more coaches on down the stretch between spring football and of course, March Madness. It's certainly a fun time for a lot of those sitting at home and catching all the action there going on. We will be back. We will see if certainly when Pat Ford wants to Pat Forty wants to join us at some point down the road, but we'll give him a little time off, certainly after getting back from Italy, but he will be back on the pod in no time. In the meantime, be sure to rate and review. Give us 5 stars. Whether you want some more guests, or go ahead and leave us a comment. Whether you don't want us to have Pat back, we will take those comments in under advisement as well. For Kevin and producer Kent, I am Brian Fisher. We'll catch you again next week.